The 114th Congress begins today. Congressman Dan Kildee is with us now from Capitol Hill. He, of course, is the Democratic representative from Flint. Welcome, Congressman.
Thanks. It's good to be back on.
You and I have talked on this show a lot about the terrible approval ratings that Congress has and how fed up the public is with gridlock and that hyper-partisan atmosphere on the Hill. I'm wondering, what do you think the prospects are for the 114th Congress to, I don't know, frankly, do better than the 113th?
Well, it remains to be seen. The first few votes look like it's going to be a replay of the 113th Congress. You know, another vote to essentially repeal the Affordable Care Act, another vote on the Keystone Pipeline. It's possible that those votes are just going to allow the Republican leadership to satisfy the new members who want to be able to express themselves on those sort of almost theatrical votes that will take place. The question is then whether or not they will turn to real legislating. If they do, we have a chance to get things done. As you said, people are frustrated with Congress. The low approval rating is earned. But I think it would be a mistake for the Republicans to misread the result of the 2014 elections as some sort of an endorsement or mandate for their ideological agenda. My read of the frustration is that people just want to see us take on these big questions that the country faces and get our work done. We can do that with a Republican majority. I would prefer a Democratic majority. But there isn't anything about the Republicans being in charge that should prevent us from working to solve these big questions. And the Democrats can't use our minority status as an excuse for not participating in the legislative process.
Good point, which makes me wonder, what will it look like on the ground level? How would you and other Democratic lawmakers advance your bills and your causes past that Republican majority?
Well, if we can get back to what had long been the norm in Congress, no matter who was in charge, there were procedures that allowed for thoughtful amendments to be considered by the whole House. What we've seen in the last 2 years, and just at least in the 2 years that I've been here, is the Republican majority in the House using the rules, I think abusing the rules of the House, to prevent us from offering amendments and then getting a yes or no vote. The reason that's so important is that if we can get our ideas considered by the House, I think what we would find is that there's much more agreement across party lines on some of the approaches that we want to take to these big challenges than are ever allowed to be manifest in votes that we take, not because we don't agree, but because those votes are never held. The rules of the House determine whether or not we can offer amendments. And that's been the biggest frustration, is that we're not in the driver's seat, for sure. We know that. But we ought to be able to offer our suggestions. And if the House agrees, accept them. And if they don't, reject them. That had been the norm here for so long. And then just over the last few years, we've seen that the rules of the House have been used to prevent the voices of the minority from being considered in the legislative process.
What makes you think it'll be different, that you might be able to kind of go back to the way things were instead of keeping things, as you say, you feel like it was slanted and in the way the rules were used? What makes you think it'll change?
I don't know that it will, but I'm hopeful that it might. And of course, I'd prefer the shoe to be on the other foot. But the truth of the matter is now, the Senate is now under Republican control. So many of the concerns that more ideological members of the House on the Republican side had about allowing amendments to the floor was basically they were concerned that the Senate would accept the language that Democrats were proposing and then they would lose control over the agenda. Hmm. They no longer have to worry about the Senate undoing the work of the House. Both bodies are run by the same party. So it does give them, the Republican leadership, the freedom to be more bipartisan than they had when they were always concerned about basically handing over to the Senate the keys to the Congress. They don't have to worry about that any longer. There's an opportunity that they have to reach across party lines, and it's going to be up to them to determine whether they want to do that. I will say, at least for my part and for most of the members of the Democratic caucus, we are willing and ready to work in a bipartisan fashion. We just need the opportunity.
You mentioned, Congressman Kildee, about that if resolutions and ideas can be discussed and talked about, that there's a much better chance of seeing bipartisan agreement. Does that door swing the other way as well? Does the Democratic Congress see common ground with the Republicans?
I think we do. My caution to my own colleagues is to not take this moment as an opportunity to simply be the party of no. We actually have to be open to the ideas that the Republican conference will offer and not just be a knee-jerk, negative, sort of anti-party. I think if we take that approach, we send a message to them that we can work with them. But many of the issues we need to take on really don't have strong ideological foundations. For example, we need an infrastructure bill desperately in this country. We need to rebuild our roads, our bridges, our rail, our ports. That is not a partisan question. I've never seen a Democratic road or a Republican road. We need to do that. And historically, transportation bills have been bipartisan. That's one of those issues that ought to transcend partisanship. We should and absolutely need to take up.
Looking ahead to the next 2 years, Congressman, what's on your agenda? What's most important to you and bills you're preparing or issues that you really feel are the most important?
Well, I mean, one of the big issues for me will be the federal budget and trying to make sure that the priorities that are manifest in the federal budget are consistent with the needs of the people that I represent. So I want to focus on supporting higher education, making college more affordable, supporting the redevelopment of older industrial cities. I mean, my principal agenda for this term going forward will be to try to get federal policy for America's cities regenerated, realigned with the needs of those older cities that have struggled in the transition from the old to the new economy. And there's all sorts of ways that we'll approach that. But it's primarily trying to get Congress to take on these big questions, immigration reform, tax reform, infrastructure investment, try to move the ball forward and, you know, do it in a bipartisan fashion. That's going to be my goal.
Have you had conversations with the new Michigan members of the House? And I'm particularly wondering if you've had a chance to talk with Republicans Mike Bishop and Dave Trott and John Molinar. Do you think these are people willing to, you know, look for a bipartisan consensus?
I think so. And, you know, while we do have ideological differences, I'm going to be visiting all three of their offices today. I have particularly sought out John Molinar because he and I have a long shared district boundary and we share Saginaw County. And I've known John for some time. And despite the fact that we probably do have different political philosophies, we have pledged to one another that we're going to continue the same kind of a relationship that Dave Camp and I had, his predecessor. I think in Michigan, we have a special responsibility for bipartisanship because there are unique Michigan interests that will only be served if the Michigan delegation works together. Two that come to mind immediately are the protection and support of the American auto industry, and secondly, the Great Lakes. Those issues generally transcend partisanship, and it's really important for this new Michigan delegation to make an early statement that when it comes to issues that are particular to Michigan, party stands aside, and we stand for our state first and foremost.
New faces are coming in for their first day today as members of the United States Congress. And I'm wondering if you'll take us back 2 years ago when you sat down at that desk as a brand new congressman. You, of course, succeeded your uncle, who'd represented Flint in Congress for 36 years. So you grew up close to Congress, but now you were the one they're calling congressman. What was that like?
You know, I think about that day, and today I'm sort of going through the paces all over again, and it reminds me of just exactly how overwhelming it was. I have to admit that today I have sort of that same excitement, only this time I'm not a freshman. I will not get lost on the way to the floor of the House. I'll know my way. I know most of the members now. But it's that same sense of wonder and amazement and just being so much aware of the honor that the people of my district have given me by allowing me to represent them. You know, it's difficult to not be a little bit emotional when I consider the history of this Congress and the fact that I get to play a little bit of role in creating history for future generations.
I'm wondering what do's and don'ts you might share with Michigan's freshmen, with Brenda Lawrence, Dave Trott, Debbie Dingell, John Molinar, and Mike Bishop. What would you share with them?
Well, I think the one big thing is to take care of yourself. This job can be absolutely overwhelming, and I'm almost back to my pre-2012 election weight. You know, you've got to take care of your physical and mental health. You have to be able to pace yourself and manage your schedule and rely on very well-qualified, hardworking, smart staff people. You can't do it all yourself. It's just an overwhelming job. The other, I guess, piece of advice is we have to be willing and able and ready to weigh in on lots of issues all across the policy spectrum. But to find that one thing that you can really provide some expertise on and try to own that particular issue, that to me, the successful members of Congress are able to find that one thing where they become the go-to person. For me, it's the regeneration of America's older cities. For somebody else, it might be another issue. that is advice that I got in the last 2 years. I have found exactly how important that advice was.
Democrat Dan Kildee, Congressman from Michigan's 5th District, on this, the opening day, opening session of the 114th Congress. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.